The publication of the journey from Petersburg to Moscow in May 1790 infuriated Catherine II and prompted Radishev's quick arrest and detention. The aging empress had seen the pamphlet against her politics behind the apparently benign Sterne-like travelogue. Bad timing was the main cause of her anger, as the political evolution of contemporary France had made her intolerant to the expression of social and political criticism she had once admired in the works of the French philosophe. Radishev was first sentenced to death, then the verdict was commuted to 10 years of detention in the fort of Ilimsk in eastern Siberia. The writer left the Russian capital in chains on September 8, 1790, and after a 16-month journey to the point of his detention, spent 5 years in Ilimsk until Catherine's death and Paul I's ascension to the throne set him free from his Siberian exile. Radishev survived the harsh material and climatic conditions of his detention, largely thanks to the support of his former superior and patron, Alexander Romanovich Vorontsov. Vorontsov not only provided Radishev with books and money, but also offered him the possibility to keep a connection with the outside world through the correspondence which he exchanged with him during his detention. We do not know Vorontsov's letters to Radishev, however, we do know Radishev's letters to his patron. They form the larger part of the writer's known correspondence, published in the third volume of the Soviet academic edition of Radishev's works. These letters were written in Russian as well as in French. The aim of the present talk, thus, is to examine the factors prompting the choice of each language in the letters. Before examining Radishev's letters, though, I will briefly sum up the rules of bilingualism in Russian correspondences of the nobility from the end of the 18th and beginning of the 19th centuries. The scholars who studied bilingual French and Russian letters came to the conclusion that the choice of one or the other language depended on three different factors. First, the social and or sexual identity of the addressee. Second, the content of the letter. Third, various textual strategies aimed at shaping the reaction of the addressee to the letter. For example, French was the proper language when writing to a lady, to one's fiancée, to a lesser-known addressee, to one's parents, or to any older addressee. Russian, on the contrary, was appropriate when writing to friends or to one's spouse. Indeed, writing in French to close friends would have been a sign of coldness toward the addressee, and writing in French to one's spouse would have sounded like a misplaced attempt to trifle. Russian was also the language of the administration, and as such was mandatory when writing to a civil servant, especially with a higher rank. The content of the letter also influenced the choice of the language. French was preferably used when writing business letters, especially those addressing humiliating financial matters, a topic which would have sounded petty in Russian. French was also used when discussing intellectual matters such as philosophy or literature. This, however, changed in the first quarter of the 19th century when the members of the Artemis group adopted Russian to discuss their own literary achievements. French, however, remained the language of philosophy. French also seems to have been favored for introspective letters. French was the language of wit, and, as said above, was also preferable for trifling, whereas Russian was the language of marital love. According to Lotman, French was also the language of honor, and as such seems to have been favored when performing rituals closely attached to the ethos of the aristocracy, such as demanding satisfaction from an offender. As for Maimina, she points out that only the use of specific language made it possible to address certain topics. For instance, joking about ladies was permitted in French, not in Russian, where it would have sounded rude. Finally, as said above, letters with an official character were supposed to be written in the official language of the empire, meaning Russian. Violating the accepted norms established according to the identity of the addressee or the content of the letter allowed letter writers to influence the reception of their letters by their addressees. For instance, using French to discuss a topic which would have normally required Russian helps minimizing its importance or gravity. Writing in French also helps hide the letter writer's true intentions or ideas behind French clichés and borrowed role models. Using French allowed concealing one's real intimacy behind a conventional one, often provided by French literature. As said above, it was also a way to show coldness to a friend who would have expected a letter in Russian. Finally, using French instead of Russian in an official letter to a hierarchical superior, was used in order to claim one's moral equality, regardless of rank, as can be testified from Pushkin's letters to Berkendorf. Scholars working on bilingualism in Russian correspondences also address the problem of bilingual letters, written partly in one language, partly in the other. Despite a common idea, Pushkin, for instance, was not against mixing the two languages. He only required that it should not be the consequence of laziness and that it should be justified by the context. Nevertheless, mixing the languages was a sign of familiarity and as such was forbidden in formal exchanges. So what about Radishev's letters from exile? Of the 72 letters published in the academic edition, 47 were written in French, 20 in Russian, and only 5 in both languages. Obviously, Radishev was reluctant to mix the languages. And when he mixed them, he often separated the two languages by using them in different parts of the letter. For instance, in letter 33 from October the 20th, 1790, the main part of the letter is in Russian and the postscriptum is in French. As in this example, shifting from one language to the other was a way to change the subject, and as such, testifies of the influence on Radishev's letters of a rule frequently referred to in Russian and foreign letter writing manuals. The rule in question demanded the visual separation of the various topics addressed by the letter. For instance, in the 1822 edition of the «Новейший самый полный и подробный письмовник» или «Всеобщий секретарь», the rule reads as follows. «Начиная говорить о другой материи, должно сделать приметное разделение». End of quotation. While serious about separating paragraphs written in different languages, Radishev obviously tolerated lesser infractions to the non-mixing rule. For instance, he frequently used isolated words from language B in letters written in language A. These minor infractions seem to follow three different patterns. The first pattern consists in using a Russian word in a French-written letter. Radishev resorts to this pattern when referring to Russian realia, which he obviously considers impossible to translate. Such a pattern was common in 18th century Russia and appears in numerous correspondences, for instance, in Princess Dashkova's letters. These realia are either toponyms, Nizhny, for Nizhny Novgorod, or refer to social statuses, Syn Boyarsky, or, for instance, Izvoshchik. When referring to social statuses or professions, they are used with a French article, consistently with a rule pointed out by Irina Papino. Realia can also refer to objects, лыжи, for skis, or мамонтова кость, for mammoth bone. They also refer to proper names, such as Елизавета Васильевна. Radishev, finally, also uses Russian to refer to famous characters from Russian literature, such as von Wisin's Кутейкин and Цифиркин, in letter 55 from November the 26th, 1791. Resorting to the Cyrillic script in French-written letters seems to have displeased Radishev, though. Consequently, when using Russian words, he often transliterates them into latent characters or even Frenchifies them. For instance, Radishev uses the word «Kopek, Verst, or Pud» in a letter from 1792. In another letter, when referring to a type of fabric, he transliterates the Russian word into latent characters and supplies his addressee with the definition of the word he is using. Quote, «Daba ou toile peinte bleu». The third and last pattern used by Radishev is the opposite of the first one. It consists in using a French word in a Russian written letter. See, for instance, quote, «Хотя они оба сибиряки, однако же во многих вещах они между собой только различествуют, как англичанин от француза, пропорцион гарды». End of quote. The use of language B here is limited to an idiom, the Russian equivalent of which either does not exist or is thought to be less expressive by Radishev. Such instances occur in Pushkin's correspondence too. According to Maimina, they aim at shaking up the possibly declining attention of the addressee. In Radishev's case, the insert may also be an attempt to be witty by emphasizing the somewhat unexpected nature of his comparison. French being the language of wit, this would explain the shift from Russian to French. Finally, Radishev's letters to Vorontsov show an interesting case of contamination of language A by language B. In a letter from April the 10th, 1792, he writes, quote, «Время здесь иногда хорошо, иногда дурно. Вчера день был очень теплой». The academic dictionary of 18th century Russian does not mention any use of the word vremya in the sense of weather. Therefore, it seems to be an example of contamination of the Russian language by the French language, where temps means both time and weather. It can be interpreted as a Freudian slip, as time, no less than weather, was a concern to Radishev during his detention in Siberia. As one of the main linguistic features of his letters, Radishev's general reluctance to mix the two languages informs us about the nature of his relationship to his man addressee Vorontsov. However close the two men may have been, Radishev never allowed himself familiarity, as he always kept in mind that he was writing to his former superior and patron. Therefore, the epistolary connection between the two men was obviously not based on friendship, which allowed mixing languages in the epistolary communication process. Without resorting to friendship, the relationship was close enough, though, and supposed, from Radishev's part, that he would not conceal any aspect of his inner life from his patron. Such a deal originated in Radishev's sentimental and Rousseauist striving for transparency and in his desire to pay off his patron symbolically for his protection. The intimacy thus offered was, however, not totally transparent, and was fabricated in order to present a positive image of Radishev and one that would be acceptable for his patron. This explains why Radishev described at full length the moral sufferings imposed upon him by exile, but carefully concealed the symbolically incestuous relationship which he entertained in Siberia with his sister-in-law. This peculiar kind of intimate relationship, thus, is not fake, but selective. It is demanded by the semi-official type of relationships which tie together a patron and his protégé. It is the privileged expression of what could be called, as Kirill Ostrovat once did, bureaucratic sentimentalism. In the present talk, one must wonder what language is most appropriate for this specific kind of relationship. In order to do so, we must first examine which language Radishev uses in his letters to his relatives and close friends, to whom he is tied by a relation of real intimacy. A quick look at Radishev's letters to these addressees shows that he writes to them in Russian. In Russian are letters to Radishev's father, Nikolai Alexandrovich, letters to his brother, Moisey Nikolaevich, and his letters to his friends from the years spent at Leipzig University, Alexander Andreevich Ushakov, who eventually became his brother-in-law, and the famous mason and friend of Karamzin, Alexei Mikhailovich Kutuzov. The reasons prompting the choice of Russian here are quite clear. Radishev's father was a traditional middle-range landlord living in the province, an old-school starodom type with a strict code of conduct, who expressed anger at his son and called him a Tatar when he heard that Radishev had had children with his sister-in-law during his Siberian exile. As such, while he definitely mastered French, as testified by Pavel Radishev's recollection about his father, he probably rejected it as the language of the petit maître from both capitals and of the philosophers who had turned his poor son's head. A somewhat similar explanation works for Kutuzov too. Moscow masons wrote in Russian or German as a sign of their ideological estrangement from rationalist French culture. Typically, Kutuzov's letters to Radishev were written in Russian. As for the writer's brother and brother-in-law, writing to them in French would have introduced in the letters a sort of coldness incompatible with the expression of true feelings, consistently with one of the rules I referred to earlier. It seems tempting, then, to see Russian as the language of real intimacy, used by correspondents connected by family ties or deep mutual knowledge, as well as by equal statuses in terms of social position and age. Oppositely, French could be regarded as the language of the selective and fabricated intimacy of bureaucratic sentimentalism, as numerous letters from Radishev to his patron are in French. This pattern, unfortunately, fails to describe the complexity of Radishev's epistolary bilingualism. Indeed, Radishev also wrote to his sons in French, and significantly, many letters to Vorontsov were written in Russian. Therefore, the choice of the language is obviously not determined by the identity of the addressee. Content seems only slightly more effective as a criteria of choice. Certainly, Radishev favors French to talk about literature, especially French one, or to discuss intellectual matters such as education or physics, thus apparently designating French as the intellectual language of his correspondence. But he resorts indifferently to French or Russian to discuss all the main topics of his correspondence with Vorontsov, His health and the health of his family, his moral sufferings, his gratitude toward his patron, the tale of his journey to Ilimsk, the description of the geography of Siberia and its economy, his own pitiful financial situation and his family worries. Therefore, neither the identity of the addressee nor the content of the letter seem always relevant to explain the choice of the language in Radishev's letters. As Paperno pointed out, shifting from one language to the other did not always serve a definite purpose or evade an established rule. Sometimes it was just the expression of the letter writer's own subjectivity. This means that resorting to one or the other language was a way of expressing one's state of mind. In Radishev's case, we can suggest that the choice of the language depended on the various feelings of anxiety he was experiencing in Siberia. For instance, it is clear from his letters that he favors French when he feels at ease with Vorontsov. On the contrary, he switches back to Russian when he feels guilty before him, generally because he delayed fulfilling or even failed to fulfill an order from his patron. In letters 57 from December the 10th and 58 from December the 19th, 1791, for instance, Radishev begs Vorontsov in Russian to forgive him for not obeying his order to leave Tobolsk at once. By switching back to Russian, the official language of the Russian administration, Radishev restores the hierarchical relationship which used to tie in with his patron and shows him his submission. Once the storm is behind him, he switches back to French, the language which creates the utopian equality between correspondents typical of bureaucratic sentimentalism. This difference is nowhere more visible than in the forms of address used in the two languages. When addressing Vorontsov in French, Radishev uses simple and dignified monsieur. On the opposite, when writing in Russian, Radishev uses a longer form specifying his addressee's nobility title and therefore his social superiority, «Милостивый мой государь, граф Александр Романович». The other factor playing a role in the choice of the language is obviously geography. Apparently, the anxiety caused by the growing feeling of estrangement and loneliness experienced by Radishev as he pursued his journey eastward, deeper and deeper into Siberia, had a direct influence on the choice of the language used in his letters. While still in Tobolsk, the main urban center of western Siberia, Radishev wrote to Vorontsov, all right, in Russian, while probably using French for his interactions with the local elite. On the contrary, when he reaches Ilimsk, his final destination, he starts writing to Vorontsov in French exclusively. It seems, thus, very likely, that the total lack of civilized society in Ilimsk made him crave the use of the French language, seen as a tie with civilization. Radishev's situation in this regard was very reminiscent of Ovid's, who, exiled in Pontus, wrote in Tristia, «Barbarus ic ergo sum, qui anant intelliger illis». Surrounded by people who did not understand Latin, Ovid felt deprived of his humanity and therefore compared himself with a barbarian. Similarly, Radishev wrote to Vorontsov, «Vivant dans les vastes forêts de la Sibérie, parmi des bêtes fauves et des peuplades qui souvent n'en diffèrent que par les articulations d'un langage, dont ils ne savent pas même apprécier la valeur, je finirai, je crois, par devenir l'homme heureux de Rousseau et je marcherai à quatre pattes. » My conclusion. To conclude, we can say that shifting from one language to the other in Radishev's letters from exile had much to do with anxiety. In the writer's case, anxiety was fueled by two different factors. Firstly, it was the usual anxiety experienced by service noblemen dealing with their hierarchical superiors. As David Renssel rightly pointed out, letters and letter writing manuals published in 18th century Russia clearly voiced the deep feeling of anxiety experienced by the members of this social group as they both relied on and despised patronage. Europeanized service noblemen were torn apart between the feeling of their own dignity, which in Radishev's case prompted him to write to his patron in French, and the awareness of the instability of their own social position, prompting our writer to seek protection from Vorontsov by reminding him of his dependency upon him, which is something he would do in Russian. Secondly, it was the anxiety of the exile, confronted with the loss of his privileged social status and estranged from the people he was socializing with in Siberia. Thank you very much.